Hello, everyone. Thanks for giving us your time today. I'm Ian Hamilton in New York, joined by David Heaney from London, broadcasting this episode of VR Download today. This is week 4 of 2024, and I'm wearing a Quest 3 right now. We're live on YouTube and on replay across every podcast platform, and you can support our work directly with membership at uploadvr.com. David, what do we have today?
Hello, everyone. Sorry we're starting a bit late today. Any of you in the UK will know, or even any of you that read the UK news or have family in the UK will know that there was a big storm over the weekend and I was actually away and I was supposed to come back on Sunday night, but I got stranded and had to only start work today. So, you know, I had to pick up on all the work for Monday and that meant we're just starting a little bit later than usual to get those articles out. You can see those articles on uploadvr.com and some of them will be what we're discussing today. So, we'll first discuss the Vario Aero production ending, that PC VR headset, their first and only consumer-focused offering, is no longer being produced with no direct successor. We'll then discuss Mark Zuckerberg's strong denial of the media narrative that Meta's AI focus is a pivot away from AR and VR, Zuckerberg clearly denying that. And then everything else we talk about from there on will be about Apple Vision Pro. We are obviously, you know, under 2 weeks now from launch. So we'll talk about the pre-orders opening, how those pre-orders might have went, the pricing for the storage and accessories. We'll then talk about some content news. So you may have heard Netflix and YouTube won't have apps on Vision Pro and they will specifically opt out from their iPad apps even being available. We'll also talk about Apple Immersive Video and how that might be 180-degree video done right, potentially. And then we'll finish off by talking about impressions, both from some of the other people who tried it and what they've said about comfort in the different straps. And of course, Ian's excellent second impression piece. Ian had a second demo with Vision Pro, and he spoke a lot about that digital crown, the dial that lets you tune your reality. So yeah, we'll have two stories before Vision Pro, and then from then on, it will be all Vision Pro.
Yeah, we're sorry we're late this week. It's been a hectic couple of days to get us in here. I'm excited to talk about my time in Apple Vision Pro, but I will save those notes for the end. I'm seeing the comments out there from how stormy it is over there in England, and it's still pretty cold across the United States. And I think James O'Loughlin there might be talking about the New York pandas that we're supposed to get. We're supposed to get pandas in New York at some point, and I haven't been paying close attention, but it is an important event for New York to get pandas. So that's what's going on worldwide amongst our audience. And let's just get right to it. Let's talk about that news because I think our audience really wants to hear about Apple Vision Pro. Share the link out to other people if people are curious about it. We're going to dive right in. So let's get into it.
Yeah, I can still hear the wind myself, the battering against the window beside me. So thankfully, it shouldn't affect the internet connection in any way like that. It's not that bad here. But let's start by talking about that Vario news.
Wait, on that note, David, I have two Wi-Fi networks in my house, and the first Wi-Fi network was acting a little weird. I went into the menu and changed the Wi-Fi network and I never left your app. It successfully lived on a live broadcast going from one Wi-Fi network to another, and the connection is better on the other hand. So kudos to you. Congratulations. Go ahead. Talk about your...
There we go. Shows the reconnection. Tech is working well. But yeah, we have a new member in the chat. I see Headset Historian. As I said last week, I'm a fan of your content. Great to see you in the comments again. So Vario Aero was the company's, as I said, first and only consumer-focused offering. You may know Vario from their XR and before that VR line of headsets. It started with VR1, then you have sort of the XR4 being the most recent. But all of those high-end headsets are, you know, priced north of $4,000 or, you know, just under and north of $4,000. They're targeted primarily at government and enterprise. And in 2021, Vario decided, what if we make a headset for consumers instead? Prosumers, really, given the pricing. The Vario series, their main enterprise and government series, big selling point is obviously the human eye resolution that in their previous headsets was only in the center. And in the XR4, they're near human eye resolution all over. They're not quite there. Human eye resolution is considered to be roughly around 60 pixels per degree. And the XR4, which just came out for around $4,000 for the base model, gets around 52 to 54 pixels per degree over the entire area. But this Vario Aero didn't do that at all. This was still the highest resolution PC VR headset you could get up until the Pimax Crystal shipped last year, but it was priced at a very staggering price of just under $2,000. And that was only for the headset itself. It used SteamVR base station tracking. So on top of that, you would need to get, you know, SteamVR base stations and Valve Index controllers. But for that, you did get a headset that was groundbreaking in some ways. You know, this was nearly 3K per eye resolution, and it did offer some great features like eye tracking that in supported titles could enable foveated rendering, especially with some of the PC open source community tools like OpenXR Toolkit. You could get that set up in certain games like Flight Simulator. So this was an enthusiast headset, very much so, but it never really gained any traction. It never even gained enough usage on Steam VR to get its own listing. So it was kind of stuck in the other section on the Steam hardware survey, which made up a total of 1.something% last month, 1.19%. Its price was cut in half from around $2,000 to around $1,000 back in September. And it's now clear that that was a clearance sale. So production has ended, limited quantities remain from selected external retailers, and Vario has told us that it will continue to support the headset with bug fixes and security updates until the end of 2025. And the final thing to say here is that the XR4, their newest enterprise and government headset, will at some point this year start taking orders from consumers. So if you really want to spend $4,000 on the XR4 and get that incredible resolution across its really impressive field of view, you will be able to do so later this year.
I'm curious to see over time how our viewer numbers respond to discussion like this. We're obviously leading with this by design, right? We know people are interested in the Apple Vision Pro news that's at the end of this, except the prices are in the same ballpark when we start talking about these things are multi-thousands of dollars, right? They're ostensibly for the same markets, right? The same groups of buyers hypothetically have the amount of money to spend on one of these headsets. But our audience, no one in our audience is chomping at the bit to buy this thing. Whereas I think there are people in our audience that are excited for the Vision Pro.
Yeah, I'd say obviously these are in the same affordability ranges, but I don't think these are for the same buyers. This is the difference here, obviously, is this requires a powerful gaming PC, which itself would be thousands of dollars on top of its price. And you have to be tethered to that. This is very much so a different kind of consumer. I think the kind of people that buy Vision Pro will be wealthy early adopters of Apple products and that are probably less likely to be PC gamers, whereas this the market for this really was, you know, simulators. People who have racing sim setups and flight sim setups were the majority of the buyers for this, but that was not a huge market in the end.
Oh yeah, as you can excited, I'm excited to jump forward to the end of the show, and I think our audience too. We're starting to build up the audience. Are there any comments you want to get into there before we get to the second subject? Because it does start to build as soon as we start talking about Meta here.
Yeah, for sure. Just having a look at the comments here. A few people saying that they're not personally interested in the Apple Vision Pro themselves, but they just sort of like the discussion about it. That's something I expect is going to be pretty common here. RM saying XR4 is enterprise only. There's no OS for ordinary consumers. To be clear, the Vario XR4, like Vario's other headsets, are PC headsets. They support Steam VR, so software-wise, you can use anything on Steam VR. They also have their own system software, the Vario base software, but you can use this as a Steam VR headset. So once they sell the XR4 to consumers later this year, you just plug it into your PC. There's no operating system. These are not standalone computers. No Vario headset is standalone, and Vario is very clear that they see the PC as one of their distinguishing factors. you know, whereas Vision Pro is limited by its M2 chipset, which is remarkably impressive for a standalone headset, it's not the same as your RTX 4090. Your RTX 4090 is significantly, like an order of magnitude, more powerful than the M2 chipset.
I'm looking at Creative Experiments comment here. I'm sticking with my Pico 4. Tim Cook has not taken my money. I think that's an interesting sort of mindset, right? There's plenty of people that bought into Quest 2 or Quest 3 or Pico 4 that are just going to be happily playing their VR games for the next few years, right? They don't need all this other stuff that's being planned or offered right now.
Yeah. For most people, these prices are absurd. Like we recognize that. We're not out of touch enough to know. Obviously, these prices are absurd for the majority of people. This is an enthusiast product, and Vision Pro is a wealthy early adopter product.
All right. I think we should get into this next subject with Mark Zuckerberg denying Meta's AI focus means that they're not going to focus on AR and VR. Why don't you break this down for our viewers out there who might be a little bit misled by some of the narrative out there.
Yeah, you're absolutely right that there is a lot of misleading reporting going on here. People go for really easy clicks. And one of the easiest way to get a click is just to come up with some really kind of dramatic and appealing narrative that sounds really cool and really dramatic, but it doesn't have to have a basis in reality to get clicks. And one of those narratives is, of course, this idea that Meta's AI focus is a pivot away from AR, VR. So, you know, Zuckerberg just being like this kind of a dog chasing some sort of toy. And as soon as he sees a new toy, he chases after that. But that's clearly not what's happening here, you know, and we can back that up with a lot of evidence. And in a recent interview with The Verge's Alex Heath, Mark Zuckerberg very clearly strongly denied this idea, saying, "I don't know how to more unequivocally state that we're continuing to focus on Reality Labs and the metaverse. It's just not a trade-off between those two things." And so the first problem with this narrative is the idea that Meta's interest in AI is something new. Meta was actually one of the first big tech companies to set up a AI research lab back in 2013. More than 10 years ago now, they set up Facebook AI Research, and that was set up being led by Yann LeCun, who still leads it, and he was one of the 2018 Turing Award winners that's considered one of the three godfathers of AI. He still leads that organization. The Meta's AI lab, it's called Meta AI now, but it was called FAIR, Facebook AI Research, for a very long time, is considered one of the top research labs in the world. And over the past decade, the fruits of its research have gone into Facebook's products. You see, you know, Instagram's recommendation algorithm and moderation, the Quest headsets, tracking and computer vision software. So, you know, recently with obviously OpenAI's GPT becoming really popularized and Meta's open source competitor Llama there, some people have this idea that Meta just jumped into AI and jumped on the bandwagon, but that's not true. So this is not even a pivot at all. This is just Meta continuing its AI funding as it has. And it's not taking away from Reality Labs, its AR VR division. Meta is still spending more than $15 billion each year on its AR VR division. And in the last earnings call, the CFO, Susan Lee, said that she expected Reality Labs' losses to increase in 2024 due to ongoing product development and investments to further scale our ecosystem. And we talked about that on this show back in October. And to be clear, that's losses in a financial bookkeeping sense. What those really are, if you look at what they're spending it on, is investment. More than 50% of that money is going to the research and development of AR glasses, a product line that hasn't even launched yet. They're also reportedly working on a cheaper version of Quest 3, which may be called Quest 3 Lite, and partnering with LG on a future high-end headset, which may be called Quest Pro 2. So they're continuing to invest billions of dollars into this division of the company. They're continuing to develop new products. They're still developing those AR glasses that, as we talked about a few episodes ago, they may show off later this year. And from all of the evidence we've seen, from the fact that Mark Zuckerberg has repeatedly discussed this as a multi-decade venture and talked about how the fruits of this will arrive in the 2030s, there is simply no evidence for the mainstream media narrative that Zuckerberg has pivoted away from AR, VR to AI.
Longtime viewers might be familiar with me bringing up this quote that's been shared a little bit around the industry, but it is that AI is the UI of AR. And it's kind of a little ridiculous acronym soup right there. But the idea being that your user interface will be based around artificial intelligence, and that will be the base layer for everything you do in VR and AR going forward. And I think that the visions that some of us have, myself obviously included, the people that throw up the Spock fingers in our comments know me. The holodeck, right, from Star Trek The Next Generation was the thing I always think of when I think of VR. You've got companies like Midjourney, the founder out there, making big claims about what they're going to do as a company. And it's really hard to think about a company like Midjourney, a startup that's trying to pick up this idea, going and actually trying to build something like a holodeck just because they've gone and built what Midjourney is so far. It's going to take a company that has made the tens of billions of dollars of investment that Meta has to actually connect those two dots, isn't it, David?
I'm not sure whether it can be done by a startup or a large company. It may be possible that startups can achieve it, but regardless of who does it, it's clear that it will happen. It is quite clear that if you look at the progress that's happening in generative models, if you look at the progress that's happening in VR and AR, it is not a crazy prediction to say that by the end of this decade, we could have software that works much like the holodeck, where you walk in and use your voice to describe the exact virtual environment and scenario you want to be in, where you interact with NPCs that you can have real conversations with that are aware of the environment, both how it was at the start and what's currently happening, and that you can have sort of interactive novels that exist in this world that's completely generated by your voice, where every 3D asset is exactly how you want it, where you point at something and tell the system how you want it to look or how you want to edit it, and that is created. It is very promising, and it seems to just be a matter of how many years out is it. One of the issues, of course, is that today you can have NPCs like that, but you're using very, very expensive servers to generate the responses. It's, you know, we've seen small versions of this where NPCs' lives are simulated, and you look at the pricing and it ends up that, you know, it costs them hundreds of dollars an hour to run. But eventually what's going to happen is you're going to have those models run on device on a headset. And at that point, it's just the price of the electricity of charging it. And that's when we're going to start to see this happening in both video games and in AR, VR.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit on this podcast. I interviewed Greg Daniels, the creator of The Office, as well as the show Upload on Amazon. You can go listen to that interview on our podcast. But in that conversation, he was talking about the rise of AI and its threat to his kind of way of doing writing, the way of doing business over the last career that he's had. And he's looking at the next generation, wondering what kind of system they're going to have. And my comment back to him was this idea of group storytelling, of storytelling like a dungeon master or telling a story together with an AI helping shape the world that all of you are creating together. I think our audience can understand some of that. Some of the biggest, most interesting games kind of have, like Demio, right? Demio is one of our favorite things. The whole game happens on this board in front of you. What isn't used much is this environment behind you. And there's so much opportunity to just have an AI build you an environment as a backdrop for whatever you're doing. And then you can build out from there, right? And if you've got three or four people, like this is ultimately the vision for Horizon Worlds that they showed us from the very, very beginning. They had multiple people in there creating very significant changes to the world all simultaneously at different scales. And we're 5-6 years ago from that initial vision. And then also remember, this is what's so funny about this like investment idea. You were in that audience with me when Zuckerberg was on stage showing Snoop Dogg as a dungeon master using their AI tools. And did you scratch your head at that, or did it make perfect sense to you at the time?
I mean, the specific branding of it was a little bit head scratching. It's a bit confusing to people that the celebrities are playing characters that they aren't really, you know. So it's Snoop Dogg playing a dungeon master, not Snoop Dogg as the dungeon master, which seemed somewhat confusing. But yeah, I understand what you're saying here. The potential here is obviously clear. Meta is starting with this idea of not just having the Meta AI assistant, but from the start having these currently text-based characters that you can interact with. And it's just a matter of time before those characters become embodied in the likes of Horizon Worlds or in VR games that are sort of fully produced. That's something they even previewed at Connect. We saw, you know, a tiny preview. I think it was just a screenshot and a promise of it happening in future, that you will be able to generate AI NPCs in Horizon. And yeah, it's very, very promising to see though early. And I think what we're, you know, what we're saying over here is just over and over again, the idea that AI is a separate investment from AR, VR, or that it takes away from it is just fanciful. These are complementary technologies.
Yep. Complementary technologies is absolutely the way to view it. And yeah, I want to go view a whole bunch of sci-fi now. I'm all amped up, but I want to get to this Apple Vision Pro section, and I think our audience wants us to talk about it soon. Any comments you want to respond to on this first section before we move on?
So having a look at the comments now, Nicholas Hampton pointing out that AI models on device is something Apple is pioneering. That's absolutely true. You also see Google doing that with their Tensor chips on Pixel. It does seem to be the trend. You know, a lot of people wonder right now, as I said earlier a few minutes ago, why can't we do this today? You know, there is GPT-4. You do have models like that that can generate the kind of narratives that could drive NPCs. The problem is nobody's going to make a game where the developer has to pay per token, or these expensive servers are generating them. So that really is the key. When do we get these AI models on device? That'll be something that we're looking at very closely in a few years' time when Qualcomm comes out with, you know, presumably XR2 Gen 3. We'll ask, you know, can this do large language models on device? And that's something that I'm sure Qualcomm's working on. In fact, they've said that's something they're working on. They want to get, specifically with Meta, they partner to get one of the Llama models running on device. Maybe today that's one of the very small versions, and how long until it's one of the large versions?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to see how trends like AR, VR, mixed reality, they don't, you know, they get marketed or branded by these companies in different ways. So they have different meaning, but they're all building towards the same general place, right? The Apple can't come out and produce a headset that is anything different than what their existing company supports, right? They're a company that ships products for profit, and all their services, everything about them is built to kind of follow that. They can't turn around and go out and build something that's exactly like the MetaQuest, and that's why we have such diverging paths right now. But they all are on the same path, and there are great strides being done with AI models to just open up user interface. Like, there are people who are making apps today who could not, because they could not code, right?
Yeah, for sure. And that idea is going to become to the point where people can make virtual worlds that can't today. People who, you know, today they could open up something like Rec Rooms, Creator Tools, or Horizons, but they can't build the kind of rich experiences you find on the store. It's just such a promising, this term gets thrown around so much, it's almost cliche, but it is going to be a democratization of creation in many ways, in the same way that a lot of the current tools today that people use have democratized art and democratized image production and video editing that used to, you know, require a whole studio. There's neither are individuals who can edit their own short films. That's something that is bound to happen to 3D. You could argue that Unity was already its first step on that, you know, 15 years ago, where, you know, a regular small team could now then make what used to take a huge large team. And this is just a trend that's going to continue. But, you know, as you're talking about those terminologies there, people really do get caught up on the terminology so much. But at the end of the day, what matters is the functionality. And as you say, all of these things are rather similar. There's not going to be a dramatic difference in these companies. As we'll talk about soon, even Apple Vision Pro, it's the software is the magic. It's essentially a souped up Quest 3. There's nothing magically different from a hardware perspective. It doesn't use, you know, holographic displays. It's still a lens in front of a display. It's still color cameras passing through the real world. It's just more expensive components and more Apple polish and a very different software approach.
Our audience is responding to us perfectly, right? They know we're building to Apple Vision Pro. They know that we've got that eyes in impressions. They know that we're gonna tell it like we see it. So it's really great to see everyone tuning in for our discussion about Apple Vision Pro. I think I want to lead off this discussion before we get to all the subjects here. I'm gonna have David run through our news here in a sec, and then I'm going to come back to my hands-on impressions. But I wanted to lead off this section by saying what our plan is here for coverage from here on out. We're planning to fly David Heaney to the United States to pick up an Apple Vision Pro that I'm going to go and get from the Apple Store. We've pre-ordered one. And I'm gonna try it out for one night. I'm sorry, David. I can't send you back to England without trying it out first. So I am going to spend one evening with Apple Vision Pro logging into it with my Apple ID and watching movies before I hand that off to David. He flies it back to London, and sometime later we're going to get an in-depth technical analysis of this hardware that's independent, done by David. Free of influence, and that's how we're going to get you the real technical analysis of this hardware, just like we have every other major headset over the last couple of years. So I'm very, very excited for that plan with David. I think we're also going to have Kyle here in New York for one night only or two nights only for us all to get into this headset, test it all out at once. Now, that's notwithstanding the possibility that Apple surprises me and popped into my inbox and offered us a review unit that we send back to them. It doesn't matter. What matters is for long-term testing, we have a headset in-house to test out apps, because this is going to be a period where devs are going to be testing out experimental apps on Vision Pro, and we need to be able to test out those apps from time to time. So we'll have that in David's hands very soon, and we will have those, all that analysis and all those hands-on impressions for our audience very soon. Now, David, let's run through our news.
Yeah, it's a very exciting time. I can't wait. It's going to be really great, and hopefully I get a few hours to check out some of the New York things. You can show me around New York if we get time. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, we'll talk about Vision Pro here today in three kind of subsections. So we'll first talk about the pre-orders, and you know, we'll talk about the pricing and how the pre-orders went, and a supply chain analyst's estimate of what that might mean in numbers. Secondly, we'll talk about a few content things, you know, Netflix and YouTube and Apple Immersive Video. And then our third section of this Vision Pro discussion, we'll talk about impressions, you know, Ian's impression and what some other people said about comfort, you know, because different people's heads and face shapes depend on comfort. We'll talk about that. So, you know, pre-orders, then content, and finally we'll finish it with impressions. So on the topic of pre-orders, pre-orders obviously opened on Friday. We saw the pricing, that there is not just one storage model, as some people thought. There is also a 512 gig model for $3,700 and a 1 terabyte model for $3,900, in addition to, of course, the $3,500 base model. The pre-orders seemed to really, really quickly sell out for the first batch. It actually depended on not just the storage size, but the state. That's a very interesting thing people didn't realize, that there was a time where in some states you could still get a launch weekend delivery, while in others it was pushed out to the next month's batch in March. It did seem like it wasn't like a week at a time jump. It seemed like once that initial batch for the launch weekend at the start of February was sold out, the next batch was pushed out into March. And that's where we are now, it seems, on looking at Apple's website. All three storage tiers across US states appear to be pushed into March. And so a supply chain analyst, Ming-Chi Kuo, who is a very prominent Apple analyst who's been following Apple's supply chain for over 10 years now, has estimated that Apple will have somewhere around 70,000 units produced for that first launch batch. And he uses this estimate, information to estimate that almost 200,000 Vision Pros were pre-ordered in total when you take into account that launch batch and the people who have ordered into March. So that's remarkable. You could have within, you know, 6 weeks of now, there could be 200,000 Apple Vision Pros out there in the world.
And that's quite an investment, quite literally. You know, the sunk cost, that in previous weeks people were asking whether Apple had spent, has now passed from Apple to the people who purchased the headset. The 200,000 or so headsets that are in the wild now have that cost literally going around their home with them, it's a little bit different than the $500 sunk cost that you put into a Quest Pro as a toy, or sorry, into a Quest 3 or Quest 2 as a toy. So I think we're going to be watching what the usage numbers are in those first few weeks. What are people who legitimately went and spent that much saying, is my hours per day in device? Am I using it a couple hours every other day? Am I using it a couple hours every day? Am I not using it all? Is it any different story than they have on existing headsets? But yes, huge numbers right out of the gate for Apple, but not unexpected, right? Given the rabid fan base built with years of trust around every computing device they've owned, maybe there's no other company on the planet that could ask that much of people this blindly and get them to spend it that quickly.
Oh, absolutely. And I think we don't have any reliable numbers for exactly how many Quest Pros Meta sold, but I would guess it was less than 500,000. In fact, I wonder if by, say, April or May, there could be already more Apple Vision Pros out there than Meta sold Quest Pro. And that was only priced at only $1,500 originally and then down to $1,000. Obviously, while Quest Pro did have some of Vision Pro's features like face and eye tracking, you know, it lacked some of the key things that make Vision Pro, which is, you know, Quest Pro did not have near 4K OLED micro displays. It had sub 2K LCDs. It did not have these dual 6.5 megapixel cameras. It had really, really bad color pass through that, you know, shocked some buyers. And obviously it did not have the M2 chipset. It was powered by a variant of the original XR2 from 2020. So these are very different products, but even had Meta tried to put these kind of specs in, I don't think Meta would have sold 200,000 units if it was priced at 3,500. I think, as you say, only Apple has the brand loyalty and the ecosystem and the marketing to be able to do that.
Yeah, this comment from Geminosity saying comparing Quest Pro sales to anything is just setting the bar as low as possible. I do appreciate that context. You caught yourself and qualified it at the end there, David. But yeah, it was a little bit of a low blow there. I will be curious to see if or when we ever see Apple Vision Pro pop up on the Steam hardware survey. That's the first time I'm bringing that up. You can add it to the bingo card going forward.
Yeah, I think as far as I'm aware, Gee Godin does plan to investigate supporting it. And that's, you know, I don't think he's made any promises, but I think that is something he's looking into so that you could use Vision Pro as a PC VR headset. There's nothing technically preventing that from happening, except, of course, the fact that it will not have track controllers. So people will still probably use it for simulators and, racing simulators, flight simulators, games you're seated. But obviously, if you want to get it for controller-based games, you're going to have to buy base stations and Valve Index controllers and do that kind of play-space alignment process, and or you could strap a Vive tracker to the top of your headset.
You know, the 86th, the Mad Hatter. You could have 7 Quest 3s for that much. That's 5 solid hours of wireless gaming right there. I'm gonna read that at its face value that like that is speaking to the amount of play, like how much time you'll actually use out of a Quest headset compared to something that is more functional as an all-in-one computing device. But I don't know. It's still funny.
I'm pretty sure they're just referring to the battery life there.
Both
of these headsets
right,
have very like similar battery life
level. Darn it! So what? Like unlimited battery life? Like, all right, I'm getting to my demo. Right, I want to talk about what happened in the battery with the battery in my demo. Let's get to content now. Right, we've got to talk about content on Apple Vision Pro, and then we'll start.
I guess the only thing I'll say just on the last pre-orders is just that if anyone thought Meta's accessory pricing was rough, Vision Pro really took the cookie there. The travel bag is $200, which is pretty crazy. Like, what was the Quest one? $60, $70? And Apple is charging $200. That was obviously not unexpected in any way, though. That is Apple's accessory pricing. And a lot of companies do this. You know, it's how they make up for sometimes selling the product with not a huge margin, such as Meta's Quest. With Apple, I think it's just how they maintain, you know, being one of the most profitable companies in the world. At some time, it was the most profitable company in the world.
I mean, yeah, you think about the straps, right? Meta sells or has been selling all of its standalone computers with a soft strap because they know that people are going to want to use it in bed, even though objectively speaking, the system fits better for a lot of people when you've got a hard strap and you're using it with the active VR gaming that they're selling most often on the store. So you've got a system that they've had to like sell compromises left and right. There's compromises everywhere over the Quest 3 and Quest 2 and even the Quest 1, just compromises everywhere. The question that we don't really have a good grasp on is, other than this external battery, what did Apple have to compromise on here?
Yeah, very interested to bring in a full review for this thing. As we've always said, with every piece of hardware in the past that we've reviewed, there's a big difference in a controlled company demo that lasts for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, even half an hour, and actually having a device in your home as a real buyer would have it. That these are very different things. There are times in the past where on this show, we've brought you impressions of a headset, and then a few weeks later, we've brought you a review of a headset. And it's very, very important to make those distinctions and just realize that no one has reviewed Apple Vision Pro yet. Not one person. There is no reviews. There are impressions, but nobody has actually reviewed it as if they have bought it as a product, unboxed it, set it up with their account, and used it in a real home setting yet.
Maybe now is a good time to address the comment from someone up here that was asking about whether David Heaney would ever consider using photorealistic avatars here in this studio. Question to Heaney from Stacy: would you consider switching to the Vision Pro to do the podcast with photorealistic avatars, or are there specific features with your studio on Quest that makes it more suitable? It's a fascinating question, and I think David and I could do an hour-long show just on what the advantages are of this current setup, what the limitations would be if we made a switch to a podcast like that. But I love that question because it goes to the very, very core of the competitive landscape between Meta and Apple. I'm going to circle back on avatars and eyesight when we talk about the hands-on section. But that is a fascinating question, and I think it speaks to the very reason why Apple and Meta are zooming in on this technology in the same way. So go ahead, David.
Yeah, so I don't think it's an either or. Vision Pro supports Unity. This app is built in Unity. If Ian and I both had Apple Vision Pro headsets, at first we will not. I think we're going to have one headset within the company. This is a $3,500 product, and I don't think we can justify yet having two of them. But if it comes to a point where we both have Vision Pros, and I have the time, and Apple releases its Spatial Personas SDK. At launch, I believe the developers will only be able to use Personas in a rectangular window, whereas soon after launch, they will be able to use it as Spatial Personas. Maybe that timeline has changed. Maybe it's available at launch. But yeah, there's nothing stopping us from replacing these Meta avatars with Apple Spatial Personas at that point if we both have the headset. Obviously, it means that we're then limited to Vision Pro, as far as I'm aware. That Spatial Personas SDK is not going to be cross-platform. It doesn't seem very likely that that's actually going to run on PC, because obviously, you know, there are three clients in this multiplayer session right now. There is my headset, there's Ian's headset, and there's the PC that is doing the actual camera and recording. If Spatial Personas only runs on Vision OS, we can't do that unless we have a third Vision headset, or we have this, you know, we do some sort of really, really complicated virtual camera on one of the headsets. That's something we could obviously look into. But, you know, there are a lot of roadblocks here, is what I'm trying to say. But if it's possible, we have no fundamental objection to it. And on that topic, keep an eye out on uploadvr.com tomorrow for a certain article about photorealistic avatars, because it may have implications for the question you're asking, but in a slightly different way than you're imagining.
We're now teasing news. We're becoming such news teasers. We don't hype hardware necessarily, even if it's $3,500 and incredible, because it is incredible. At the same time that I'm going to talk about all the problems here very soon, here all the things we're very curious about. We still need to get through content, don't we?
Yeah, so let's talk about that. There are going to be a lot of apps available at Vision Pro launch around entertainment. So Disney Plus, Peacock, Paramount Plus, Amazon Prime, a lot of these great media viewing apps that are going to let you bring in your traditional media viewing content, including 150 3D movies, which is just incredible. And we've obviously talked about the fact that Disney Plus is going to have four immersive environments that are exclusively for it, including some from its biggest IPs. So the problem is there's going to be a few missing, and Netflix and YouTube are the major ones that will be missing. They are not going to make a Vision Pro app, or at least they haven't yet, and they are specifically opting out their iPad apps. So if you want to watch Netflix or YouTube on Apple Vision Pro, you're going to have to go through the Safari browser. That's not the end of the world. It's not a deal breaker, but it does mean that you won't, for example, be able to download Netflix movies to watch on a plane ride or download YouTube videos, because you cannot do that through the browser. You need the app. You will be able to download Disney Plus content. You will be able to download, you know, from Apple's store, you'll be able to download their 3D movies. You'll be able to download Apple TV Plus content and Amazon Prime, but not YouTube and Netflix. Now, it's unclear whether this is a decision being made for kind of corporate political reasons. There is a lot of controversy in recent years about Apple's 30% store tax and companies like Netflix not being a fan of this, because they have to then... You have to then sign up to Netflix on the web, but they can't actually directly link you to that sign up. They have to just tell you, if you want Netflix, you have to be a subscriber, and you have to figure out on your iPhone, wait a minute, why am I not doing this in the app? Because if you did it in the app, Apple would force a 30% cut of that in-app subscription. So all of this is happening as Vision Pro launches, and it may be the case, and this is just speculation. I'm not the one that's come up with this idea. There are many analysts talking about this as being the potential reason that Netflix is saying, you know, Apple, you have been such a pain to us in recent years that we're not going to help you in your new platform. It may also just be that they don't have the time and resources right now to launch a Vision Pro app, but specifically opting out their iPad app for both of these companies, YouTube and Netflix, that's interesting. Because to be crystal clear here, if you're not aware, iPad apps are available on the Vision Pro App Store by default. By default, a developer has to specifically go into their dashboard on their Apple account and say, kick me off the Vision Pro Store. I don't want my iPad app there. And that's what Netflix and YouTube and Spotify are doing.
So Geminosity was another one. Rumor is that the bite mark in the Apple was in the was showed to show what percentage they take off you for being on the App Store. I believe historically that was supposed to symbolize the bite of the apple in the Garden of Eden, I think. I think this is... I'm going to go a step further and say that it is probably the 30% thing. But I'm just going to throw it out there that I wonder if it's about co-presence and the issue of what standard is kind of solidified for co-presence. I think these platforms face a very tricky situation where they need to DRM their content. They need to put digital rights management protection on every stream they put out in order to protect the rights of the artists that they're working with. And at the same time, they want to stream four copies to four people simultaneously and have all four of you feel like you're in the same room with those types of avatars that we were discussing earlier, maybe with those photorealistic avatars. David just threw up Dune on here. It's actually pretty beautiful that he threw up Dune in here, because Big Screen is a company that's out there doing exactly this. They've been doing it for years. They've been out there for years. They're doing this right now. You can go do this in a headset right now. You can go into a movie theater with other people and watch movies. And they're the leader in this space. And they even went and built their own VR headset, Big Screen Beyond, $1,000, Steam VR, built for this exact purpose. I went out there to California, and I went to their offices, and I watched Dune from start to finish in 2D on a giant flat screen monitor. And it it was a good experience. It did its job, right? There were some problems I noted in my article at the time. There were some problems when we reviewed it. But Dune in 3D is on a short list of movies that is going to be available on Apple Vision Pro. And I'm that night that, you know, a week and a half, the first movie I'm going to try to pull up in this headset is Dune 3D to compare it to the Big Screen Beyond experience from last year. And that will be like, until we have that demo, I won't be able to know how these things stack up against one another.
Yeah, it should be a dramatically better experience, because not only is Vision Pro near 4K per eye, while Big Screen Beyond is only 2.5K, but it's also, as you say, in 3D, and I think high dynamic range as well. I don't think Big Screen Beyond has a way of watching HDR content, but quote me if I'm wrong on that. But it's very interesting to bring up Big Screen, because they also faced the same problem on the Meta Quest store, where Meta wanted a 30% cut of all of those movie transactions. And so Big Screen said they just could not build a sustainable and profitable business around that. I when it comes to co-watching, that's something I'm really, really curious as to how this works at launch. We've seen from a WWDC developer session that there is the share play support on Vision Pro, where you are sitting around as avatars and watching content together. But, you know, it wasn't made clear from a consumer perspective which apps actually support this. Does that include DRM'd content? Like if you're in the Apple TV app and, you know, you buy Dune, does everyone else have to own it? Does it even work at all, even if everyone else does own it? This is one of the things we really will want to try out. We'll try and, you know, communicate with a friend of Upload that also has a Vision Pro on launch weekend and see if we can set up something like that. I doubt that was anything to do with Netflix's decision or YouTube's decision, though. But that will also be interesting in itself when these apps do eventually come to Vision Pro, or if, I would assume eventually, YouTube and Netflix are going to come to this, even if it's, you know, 3 or 5 years from now. Will they support it? It's going to be a huge, huge question. We've talked about it so many times in this show that it's one of the magical potentials of headsets. This idea that you can be on the different side of the country or a different side of the planet to your friend and sit beside them virtually and watch content together, like you're in the same room sitting and watching Netflix together. And as we've said many times in this show, it is not a technical problem. It is a rights problem. And will it take Apple to get the industry to evolve on this? Because there are many stories of how even iTunes back in the day, the idea of being able to buy your own songs and on a digital format and put it on to your iPod, even that was considered revolutionary by the music industry. And Steve Jobs had to be, according to some books I've read, incredibly forceful in his meetings with industry executives to get this to happen. And obviously the music industry then went through another revolution with Spotify and Apple Music and this all becoming a subscription. And in that time, the movie industry and TV industry have not progressed in any way. You know, you can get Spotify for what, $10, $15 a month and listen to essentially every song ever made. The vast majority, probably something like 95 to 99%. There is no such thing for movies and TV shows. You cannot even spend $50 a month and watch every movie and TV show ever made. Everything is fragmented across all of these different platforms, fragmented across countries. There's no such thing as even a show or movie being on Netflix, because it's on Netflix in Canada or Netflix in the UK or in Germany, and it's not in another country. You can literally fly from country to country and watch your entire Netflix library completely change.
No.
And this is going to be a nightmare when it comes to how do we watch things across countries with...
Fantastic. 100%. Severance. Have you had a chance to watch the TV show Severance yet?
I've seen a few episodes, yes.
Okay. So I assume there's some Severance watchers in our audience. What Dave is just describing there about the fragmentation of streaming libraries across regions means that in all likelihood, the premiere of a show like Severance is one of the first things I'll go and enjoy with another Vision Pro user sitting right beside me, because it's the lineup of really great content with people that are going to, you know, rabid Apple subscribers, as well as just wanting to have this 4K beautiful experience. Maybe you don't have people who are fans of Severance around you, and maybe they're only the couple other Apple subscribers in your social network. Well, suddenly you've got this headset to do that on. But my point there, David, is you're pointing to why Apple just did billions of dollars of investment in original content, specifically to avoid the streaming issues that he's talking about. I'm really curious if we end up with a situation where we're ultimately only able to stream Apple content that they've actually paid for in this way versus something else. Where'd you go, David?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay. He went onto his menu system. I didn't know where he was. We're moving really close here to the impressions section. And the next section actually begins to move into our impressions. And I really want to cover that really soon. But why don't you talk about Apple Immersive Video before I talk about actually seeing Apple Immersive Video?
Yeah, the last thing we will talk about before we get to impressions is, as you say, this Apple Immersive Video. And so this is both a format and a specific content offering. As anyone who has used VR headsets for any time in the past 10 years will know, 180-degree video is not new. Even 3D 180-degree video is not new. But I would hazard a guess that the majority of people watching now and in our comments after who have watched 180-degree video will have a pretty terrible impression of it, mostly because it is typically streamed at a really low bitrate for some reason. If you go into MetaQuest TV and click on a typical video, you just see all this constant blocky, low-resolution content that will not appeal to the majority of people. And while we haven't, while I haven't heard anything about what the specific bitrate of Apple's offering is, I'm cautiously optimistic that Apple may have got this right. So Apple Immersive Video mandates 8K resolution for these 180-degree videos and 3D. And they are producing their own first-party Apple Immersive Video for Apple TV Plus. So you're a subscriber. This is not free content. This is paid content with a high production value with these four shows to start. So you're going to have Prehistoric Planet Immersive, which is obviously based off that kind of award-winning David Attenborough documentary about dinosaurs that's directed by Jon Favreau. Then you'll also have this adventure series that will follow extreme sports, a wildlife documentary, and Alicia Keys' rehearsal room, so behind the scenes with a musician. There's not much to say about this because we haven't tried these yet, but this seems to have come from the acquisition of NextVR, who were the kind of technology leaders in 180-degree 3D video. And I am, as I said, very cautiously optimistic to see, has Apple finally done 180-degree 3D video right? Will I open these up on Vision Pro and see a clean, crisp, high-quality image that really makes me feel like I'm almost there? Or will it be the same old hyper-compressed, blocky swear word here that you often see on MetaQuest TV?
All right, so time to talk about the hands-on impressions. And I'm going to give a lot of context here. David, why don't you wave at me if there's a comment there that I should really stop and respond to while I give this recap, right? I did a demo last year when they announced the headset the second day. So I went to the keynote, was in the audience when they played the video announcing it. And then the next day in the morning, I went over and tried the headset for the first time in a very controlled demo, about maybe 20 minutes long. Tried out the demo for the first time, wrote about that demo, came back, and then got a second demo, basically the day before pre-order. So didn't know if it was going to happen, got an email from Apple saying, why don't you come down and check it out. Got the demo that a lot of other journalists have got of the second round of demos. Went down to an area of New York, wasn't at an Apple store, just a random office building. Went down there, waited a few minutes, saw the display stand where it's very similar to the way it's going to be displayed in the Apple store. And then went downstairs and they had the Vision Pro sitting out there with a room with a white background on the wall this time, a couch, people sitting on either side of me. There's like a PR rep over here and then the demo person giving me the demo. And I'm pretty sure the demo was personally given to me by the Apple employee who's shown in that going inside Apple video on Apple.com. So I'm getting that demo from this person over here. There's another person watching me. The person on my left has a view of what I'm seeing. And I'm dying to do whatever I want to with the headset, but they're going to give me a scripted demo. I just want to pick it up and just screw it up. I want to figure out this headset on my own. But they got to walk through me in a scripted way, exactly through step-by-step what I've got to do. That includes teaching you how to get the lenses, the headset auto aligns, and that is a really, really cool moment when you see like a green outline, I think it was, show the lenses shifting in front of you into place in front of your eyes. And you've got an Apple logo for Hello World. Then you're in this experience. And then one of the first things they teach you is you've got a capture button over here, as well as a dial right here for dialing in reality. And I spent the early part of this demo, they spend just teaching you what the dial does. And if you go read my write-up, it's basically focusing entirely on that dial. And as someone who's done VR for all these years, as someone who comes into a studio with this studio built by David Heaney, right? Every app I go into handles what David has handled here differently, right? David has chosen to show full upper bodies, right? We don't show our lower bodies except when we want to make our audience scream because we don't have lower bodies. We've done all these things to try to make this work with current VR technology. And when you hold that dial on a Vision Pro, you're seeing the room around you, the physical room. You're seeing your actual environment. And as you turn that dial, the room starts to fade away from that wall on the opposite wall. It starts to eat the floor with your immersive environment. And then you just keep going and it starts to eat your body. And where I stopped it was after it ate my stomach. As I looked down, it only had my arms, right? So what I went and looked at some of Apple's content, their fully immersive environments, and it was my physical arms in front of me, held in front of me. I look down and I see the immersive environment below me, my physical arms right here, and an immersive environment everywhere I see. And if I turn that dial just a few degrees, I mean, it's just a dial turning of this much, my stomach pops back in below me and maybe I'm fully embodied, right? That's every single VR developer out there has a different way for handling what I just described. Some people will show some kind of a stick body with inverse kinematics. Some people will show just your hands floating there. Some people just show the controllers floating in space. They don't show anything. What Apple showed me with that dial is you will be able to get the exact setting for immersion that you want across the vast majority of software you can go inside in this app. Now, the one exception to that, the one thing where this dial didn't work for seeing my physical hands is Apple Immersive Video. Apple Immersive Video takes over your full environment, including your hands. You won't even be able to see your own hands in that environment. And what has broken me about that fact is the eye tracking in this system is so good that you have to realize you don't need to see your hands in order to interact with the user interface. You can be completely disembodied, not see your own hands, and still look at the interface elements around you and select them with a pinch like this. And in the videos, like, no, this is an app. So I offered them my phone to take a photo of myself. And they're like, no, we'll take it ourselves. So they come around with me and take a photo of me doing the pinch gesture. One of my photos, I was like this. I tried to do this. They didn't send me that photo. They only sent me the photos where I'm doing the pinch. I wanted to, when I was thinking about it, leave my hand on my leg for the pinch because it worked. Almost every time I left my hand on my leg to do the pinching down here, it worked. And that would be my preferred way to interact with, to just use the interface overall. So what that means, David, is you could be in something like a really great 180 degree 3D video like NextVR. You could be in a live broadcast at a baseball game, sitting on the first baseline, and you're completely disembodied. You don't have your arms or anything. And you could still kind of like look at the play controls and pinch with your hands and interact with your environment. And the the fact that it works that way, that the fact you can be completely disembodied and still pinch with your hands to interact with anything you see on screen is a big thing to overcome. It's like I didn't realize it for days, even after this demo, that the interface works that way, that I don't actually need to see my arms at all in order to still get around anywhere I want in VR. Is there anything? There's more things I want to talk about. Also, the theatrical environment. All right, so this is a good mock-up for it here. Let's see if I can move my chair here forward. They gave me their theater experience, right? They played a clip of Super Mario Brothers 3D playing on a screen very similar to this one. So imagine Super Mario Brothers 3D is playing here, and I'm over here facing the screen. What I do is I put my arm on the couch they've got me on over here. I put my other arm on the couch over here, and I'm starting to watch Super Mario Brothers 3D, right? I look to my right, and my arm, my physical arm, is shown on the couch, and it's really believably cut out from this environment. Around me everywhere is this immersive landscape, like a sci-fi or I can't remember the exact location. It was one of those environments we talked about. That's all I see outside of my arm. So it's my real physical arm from the real world, a completely immersive environment, and over to my left, a bright, beautiful 3D movie. And what I did was I had my arm over here on the couch. I'm sitting on a couch looking left and right at my real arms. But all I'm seeing is immersive VR with the movie playing right in front of me. I don't think you're going to find this description of how well immersive VR worked on the Apple Vision Pro, because this is new to a lot of the journalists out there. But the fact that this all worked just by tuning the dial exactly where I wanted it to, so that I had my arms, I like seeing my arms, but I didn't have my body, and then I'm able to watch this 3D movie. Then here's what I did. I turned around and I looked over the couch at this direction, and I listened to the 3D audio coming out of the screen over me, and 100% believe that even with my head turned away from the 3D monitor, from this 3D movie, I felt like the audio was coming from this area, even with my head fully turned away. It felt like spatial audio coming from the screen completely behind me, and that was straight off the headset.
Yeah, there's a very fascinating idea that of being able to, as you say, dial your reality, choose exactly how much of the real and virtual you want to see. I'm really, really interested to try it. Can we talk a little bit about comfort? Because that's what I really wanted to talk about from the other impressions. And as we can see here, you're wearing the dual loop band. So I'll just kind of really briefly go over with people the situation when it comes to comfort. The default strap that the Vision Pro comes built on in the box, you take it out and has this built on, is this Solo knit band. And that's what you see in the vast majority of Apple's marketing. It's what they will put on in the in-store demos. It's what you see in pretty much all of Apple's marketing, as I said. But what we've seen from some of the other impressions, and Ian, I think you just tried the dual loop band this time, is that people really don't find that this is sufficient to support the headset's weight. We know from the spec sheet that was revealed by Apple on Friday when pre-orders opened that this thing is between 600 and 650 grams. So there was a lot of drama about the Quest 3's weight when it came out. Quest 3 is 515 grams. This is over 100 grams at most heavier than Quest 3, which is very surprising to some people. So, of course, as we talked about in last week's show, Apple have come up with this last-minute solution of giving you an alternative strap in the box. And that's what you could see in that image of Ian using it. It's what many of the journalists who tried it for the second time last week decided to use. And from what we've heard, it seems that this is actually sufficient to support the weight, and that this dual loop band is what people will probably realistically be using. So in all of Apple's marketing, people will still be using the default, but at home, the people who really own this headset and want to actually use it in their lives will be wearing this much less aesthetic, but much more practical strap. Does that match your impressions? Did you feel a difference in the weight between your June demo and WWDC with the original strap and your demo last week with the dual loop strap?
This is funny to answer that question while dying inside of a Quest 3 with the base strap, right? So I've got a Quest 3 with the Elite strap in the other room. logged into another Meta account for my family, so I didn't use that today. I've got the Quest Pro located in there with the rigid strap that I use sometimes, but for various reasons, performance reasons mostly, I've moved on to Quest 3 because it just runs a little smoother. So I'm using the most painful strap imaginable, and my head is in a lot of pain right now after an hour on this show, just because it's the base strap on Quest 3. And it's very similar in style or look to what we're seeing here on Vision Pro. I felt more comfortable in my second time through Vision Pro than I felt in my first time through Vision Pro, but not enough time to make any, even near a comparison to what it's like to spend an hour plus like I am right now. The one thing I will say is my first demo in Vision Pro, they didn't want me, like I asked before I started, can I stand up and walk around the room? Is that going to be an issue? And near the beginning of the demo, they kind of advised me to sit still. In this demo, I very quickly tried to stand up almost immediately to get positional tracking and really test out how quickly it moves. I tried to stand up and I forgot about the battery the very first time that I tried to stand up. And the demo person immediately said, oh, don't forget the battery, get the battery. I'm like, oh, okay. And I slipped it into my pocket. But I need to point that out, that habituation with Quest not having a battery, I wanted to immediately get up without the battery in a secure location here. And I don't know how that relates to comfort, right? You know, this is a comfort trade-off, but yeah, it's there.
Demo was half an hour, is that correct? And
yeah.
So did you feel any kind of weight or pressure on your face, or did you feel the heft after half an hour? No?
I didn't feel it. What I would say is on the second strapping, so I fidgeted with the top strap in the middle of the demo. I fidgeted with the back strap a little bit in the middle of the demo. I tried to get them tight, and there was a little bit of light leakage off the bottom. But like, I've got light leakage out of the bottom of my Quest 3 right now that I would compare to the similar amount of light leakage that I had when I was trying this out. So it wasn't a big deal. But I did try to kind of adjust it a little bit in the middle of my demo to get rid of the light leakage and get it a little bit tighter on my face, because there wasn't a lot of fast movement in my demo. They didn't give me anything to test that would have required fast movement. So there wasn't any way to test, you know, that kind of shaking movement on the headset and how it fits. But yeah, it felt comfortable. It felt more comfortable than the first time. I didn't feel any discomfort over that period of time. But like I said, there's no fast movement.
Yeah, this is pretty much what I've ascertained from the other impressions too. That's why I titled my article on this, Apple Vision Pro has a comfort problem, but there seems to be a solution. It does. All of the impressions seem to say this exact same thing. The default strap that we put on screen earlier just isn't sufficient. And so Apple has essentially shipped this product with a strap that is only really there because it looks better in their marketing materials, and then a real strap that will actually support the weight. And that's a really strange situation, but I guess, you know, from Apple's perspective, they don't want to put this in their majority of their marketing materials. A really interesting comment here from Jonas, who just said, does it have an external battery? I totally forgot that. And I think that's something that a lot of people aren't actually aware of still, especially because, as you can see in this image, for example, Apple is very carefully hiding the external battery in a lot of their marketing. We did see an article, I can't remember, published it, who said that when the pictures were taken from the demo session that Ian was in, they very carefully, for many people, kept that external battery out of the shot. And yes, to answer your question directly, it does have this giant external battery that, you know, will barely fit in your pocket that you're going to have to lug around with you. And some people really like this idea of taking the battery off the headset, and some people hate it. And it's going to be a huge debate in the coming years as you see these diverging strategies from Meta with everything integrated and Apple with this dual architecture. And I'm always reminded of this quote from one of Meta's executives and Jason Rubin from a few years ago, where, you know, he was asked about this by us, I think it was in 2019 or 2020, by you, Ian, in 2019, about whether he thought about this. And he said, you know, we have tried this. We have prototypes where you have an external battery, but the thing is, you have a tether, and you always have a tether, and you can feel and you remember that you have a tether, and you never forget that you have a tether. And if you look at what's happened in the past few years with headphones, you have this sort of very vocal minority of enthusiasts who will tell you that how terrible wireless audio is and how they'll never use it. And then you look at the market and the vast majority of earphones and headphones being sold today are wireless. People love them. People hate the tether. And I wonder how that'll play out in the headset market. You will always have this vocal minority of tech enthusiasts who love the theoretical idea of a tether. But I wonder, will this be something where a lot of regular consumers look at this and go, this really does put me off. I don't like the idea of this tether.
Yeah. To point out how good Apple's marketing is here, this is a proprietary connecting point, right, between the headset and the battery. This little thing is an Apple connector of some point. And then on the other side here is a standard USB-C. So you can port in for all day use battery power or wall power into the base of this thing. But you have to get an Apple specific connector for this side to have that flow into the headset. But you can't see that just looking at the system on the fly. And then yes, So I'm actually one of the few people where they actually show the cord going down here a little bit here, but they do try to frame it, and they specifically had me move the cord behind me before photos, and I'm blindfolded to the real world, so they're just doing their thing. But ideally, what I would have loved to have was a picture of the pinch and zoom gesture. That was my highlight of my demo time. I can't remember the exact gesture, but it was probably just as simple as that. But they had a high resolution photo shot on an iPhone 15 Pro right in front of me, and I zoomed in just like that, as you would imagine in Minority Report, and zoomed in at the reflection of an eyeball in this photograph. And it was phenomenal. And then I'm zooming out and flipping through the next photos, doing these little flip pinch gestures. And it's phenomenal. It all just worked really, 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 really well. And I wanted that gesture here, but they're like, yeah, they're specifically staging these things for this specific type of photograph from the headset. After the demo, I need to talk about eyesight, and I did get to see eyesight. Yeah,
Just talk a little bit about that interaction, because it does sound like this really is the magic that Apple have achieved here, and that this is going to be the most significant part of this product, and probably in the long term look back on as what this product really did for this industry. And it is to kind of introduce and popularize this interaction method, where, you know, on Quest today, you either use controllers to point like a laser pointer and click at things, or you use your hands and kind of directly touch things to mimic a touch screen. But there's two real problems with this direct touch idea. One, of course, is that you're not touching anything. You're touching midair. So there's this obvious awkwardness there. You're not getting haptic feedback. That's a little bit imprecise. Even if you had perfect hand tracking, there's still the lack of precision of having that direct tactile feedback. The other problem, of course, is this phenomenon called gorilla arm. And so to understand this, stick your hands up like I currently have mine and see how long you can actually hold this pose for. You'll find that very quickly it starts to get uncomfortable. The idea that you will be able to hold your hands up and use the Quest interface like this for long-term productivity or computing is fanciful. It's not going to happen. That's something that Meta knows itself. Meta has published research itself on this topic of Gorilla Arm. And that's one of the reasons why the Quest hand tracking interface used to be an indirect system where you pointed with your hands and pinched. And so what Apple have done here is realized that the selector should be your eyes. And this isn't something Apple came up with, but they're the first to really ship it in a product. And as Ian said, despite this photo that the Apple people have taken because it looks cool to have your hand sticking out like this, how you will really use this product is your hand will be resting on your leg. There will be no stress. You will just look with your eyes and pinch with your hand against your leg. And that's something you could do for hours and hours on end because you're not straining your arms with Gorilla Arm. And what we wonder is, will Meta follow this and how long will it take? Obviously, they can't in Quest 3 because Meta has made the decision to not include eye tracking. Quest 3's hand tracking could do this. You can actually put your hands down at your leg and pinch in the exact same way you do with Vision Pro. I've tested it in the avatar mirror. It tracks 100% of the time. Every single pinch gets picked up. The problem is you don't have your eyes. You do not have eye tracking in that headset. So Meta has committed itself to the lifetime of Quest 3 being on the market and beyond that, because they're going to have to support it for years and years after they sell their final Quest 3, to not be able to build this interaction system. Will that doom Meta to being like a BlackBerry in the post-iPhone era, or will they have to adapt? Will Samsung and Google, with their headset reportedly coming out at the end of this year, copy the same interaction method? I think they probably will. I think it's very possible that what Apple have arrived at here is the same thing they arrived at with the iPhone, which is to find the interaction system. Back then it was multi-touch gestures. With this, it's eye tracking and pinches. The default interaction system for this new medium.
Yep. David kind of confirming something there that we've watched develop in slow motion. Meta is committed to a multi-year path here where their mainline headset is incapable of doing exactly what I just described. Can you throw the camera over to me, David, because I want to demonstrate. David, it was actually key to me realizing this. I don't know how long it's been this way. It's like the buttons on the Quest and Meta systems for a long time have done things, but if your hand tracking doesn't work on a Quest headset, you can just press the volume button on the corner of the headset, and in fact the volume up button is perfectly placed for you to just put your hand on the headset and press that volume up button. But you can look around at the environment around you and press the up button at what you're looking at, and this little dot will select whatever you're looking at, and you can get through the whole Quest interface that way if you really have to. But that is, so if my finger had been, I don't know if it would have pinched right there on my leg. I tested this throughout the demo, and where my fingers were on my leg were probably a little bit further up near my knee, a little bit closer. But I left my legs down, my hands down there through most of the demo, and I was pinching like this with my finger on my leg.
It should have done it.
Cameras were able to look down and do it.
Yeah, those cameras are facing directly downwards. It should be anywhere on your leg should be picked up.
Yeah,
that's why they put them there.
Yeah, so that worked great. And yeah, it worked fantastically. And absolutely everything David is saying there is correct. I think this is the mouse click of VR. And when we go back to systems before it, it will feel super antiquated. Already that interface that I'm talking about here of looking around, it's cool. It's nice that Meta has it. But it feels 3 years old compared to what this does.
Yeah, and you know, as people in this our comments are saying, there's no reason that Meta couldn't theoretically have done this with Quest Pro. So the eye tracking on Quest Pro only uses one camera per eye, so it wouldn't have been quite as precise as Vision Pro's. But theoretically, had they made the interface size right and done the right kind of filtering, there's no reason they couldn't. We've already seen, as some people are pointing out in the comments, there are people who built a Vision OS style interaction system for Quest Pro. The problem is, as many people have pointed out in the past, and even Palmer Luckey pointed out, Meta didn't really use the eye tracking on Quest Pro at all. They used it for very few things. It was like in Horizon Workrooms and Horizon Worlds, it would drive your avatar. Foveated rendering was supported in like three games. Not even Meta's own titles bothered to support it. And the interaction system was the same as always. It's so strange and will probably be looked back at as rather bizarre that Meta probably knew that this was a very viable interaction method. They, as you know, we know they had prototypes of this, and they just either decided that it wasn't worth it because their main line of products, you know, Quest 2 and Quest 3, didn't have eye tracking, and they didn't want to put the price in. But you have to wonder how much more expensive would Quest 3 had to have been to have eye tracking. Could it have arrived at $600, $700? Based on what I know of the BOM cost of this, they probably could have got it in at $600. If they're already coming out with a Quest 3 Lite, would that have probably been the right decision in the long term to be able to support this? Meta definitely seemed to want to focus a lot on mixed reality when they were presenting and introducing Quest 3 to get out ahead of Vision Pro. You know, they wanted to be able to say that, you know, they didn't want people to put on Vision Pro and have that as their first experience of decently high resolution color pass through. There will be a lot of reviews of Vision Pro that have to now point out, even if the reviewer absolutely detests Meta, they will have to say, you know, while this feature was available on Quest 3 6 months ago. It seems strange that Meta wouldn't have wanted to do that with eye tracking. We could be sitting here talking about Vision Pro as much more similar to Quest 3, because as I said near the start of the show, Vision Pro isn't a fundamentally different technology. It is lenses in front of display panels with color cameras passing through. But what does make it fundamentally different, as we keep harping on about, is that eye tracking. It gives it a completely different interaction system.
Yeah, I'm going to go meta here for a while and just talk industry wide for a second before I come back to my individual demos. Historically, it has been Google versus Apple. The last generation of personal computing was Google versus Apple. Microsoft tried. It was an early failure with Windows Phone to bow out and find another way around that market. We are approaching Apple versus Meta. And there's others, you know, it can always change. Others can always lead the way. Google can still do its thing with Android. It's not gone by any stretch of the imagination. But when it comes to things like the 30% fee and the persona avatars, the codec avatars that we're going to be wearing, Apple and Meta are in an arms race of sorts against one another to try to have photorealistic, believable avatars that we want to inhabit inside of headsets for very long lengths of time. And we don't know which of them is winning.
I still think it's a very open question as to, is Meta going to be Apple's big competitor, or is Meta the next BlackBerry or Nokia? That's still a completely unknown in the future. It's very, very possible that it turns out that Meta essentially squandered a 10-year lead with constant incompetence, a lack of vision, a lack of execution, and just fundamental problems with their software approach. And it may turn out that that's wrong. It may turn out that Meta did, you know, eventually get its stuff together and come up and sort out its software quality problems and turn itself from a gaming console into a general productivity device. It's still unclear as to which of those things are. As time goes on and we start to see some of the fundamental software and UX problems at Meta continue to be unsolved and sometimes go backwards, and you see decisions at Meta that seem more and more puzzling, I start to put slightly more weight on the idea that Meta could indeed just end up being the next BlackBerry or the next Nokia. But I'm not all the way to that position, to be clear. I'm not saying that at this point. I'm just saying it does seem to be, the probability of it does seem to be increasing over time. And if Google arrives with their Samsung headset and it's great hardware and it has eye tracking and uses the same interaction system and it has the Google Play Store and brings over all that content and, you know, all of Google's existing platforms, Meta could be in real trouble in everything but the gaming market. I still doubt that anyone's going to approach Quest in standalone when it comes to gaming, but gaming is of the kind that we're talking about when we talk about Assassin's Creed Nexus and Asgard's Wrath 2 is at most an 100 million person market. General computing and entertainment, that's a multi-billion person market. And Meta has still not proven that they can bring the Quest out of the gaming niche and into that larger market.
Oh man, our comments are on fire. They are really fired up out there. They've been waiting for this for years, I think, like we have. We've been seeing the matchup of the century building, and it is now happening in our comments as people have been building this. I like this characterization from Ross. Let's see if this characterization holds weight. Let's see how our commenters respond to this. Meta is like the bro at the bar peacocking and pestering you all night, while Apple just swoops in and takes you home with their charm and innate sexiness.
Yeah, the marketing from Apple on Vision Pro so far has just been nothing short of sublime. From their Get Ready ad to the Vision Pro introduction you see on Apple, it's marketing of a kind we just haven't seen from Meta in recent years. There was some great marketing in the original Rift era, I think. You know, there were some, especially once they had Touch out there, there was marketing that seemed to really resonate with people. But it just seems that in recent years, Meta just doesn't get it. And I don't know how to explain what it is they don't get. But if you watch the original Valve advertisement they made for the release of the HTC Vive, and you watch the introduction video that Apple just released for Vision Pro, there's something sort of clean and simple and understandable there that I just haven't seen in any Meta advertisement. There's something they just seem to not get, which seems to be really bizarre given that their entire multi-billion dollar business is selling other people's ads.
Jorg Jorgensen adding that Apple swoops in and takes you home and then leaves with your wallet before you wake up. I think that's interesting to think about the difference, and we are going to work to unfold the difference between these companies in various ways. Amanda Watson. Let's talk about Citra VR. Amanda Watson was an employee of Meta and then released one of the coolest, most impressive pieces of technology for everyone to use at home for free, bringing their childhoods back to them in VR just overnight at CES event, an event attended by the biggest corporations on the planet trying to push the weirdest technologies on you. And here's this indie dev building something really, really significant and massively important for our audience out there. And it didn't come from any major corporation. Like, that is the story of Silicon Valley. It's what the show Silicon Valley is making fun of, is you can't always make impactful work with inside certain organizations. And you can see, like, in the history of MetaQuest, you can see, like, in the newsfeed, right? If you go to the newsfeed on Facebook, what do you see? You look at this homepage and you've got a million little objects all over your page. And it's like you can see the different teams that worked on each of those little boxes, all contributing their little square to your experience on the Facebook homepage. And now that's what you have inside the MetaQuest. You go and look at their settings ecosystem, and you've got 12 or 9 little squares, and you can see the teams. That's a 12-person team. That's an 8-person team. And each of them are getting to present their little bit of the Quest ecosystem. But what you lose from there is you don't have this manager in charge of this all expressing this very clear vision for how this should operate from the that you have a whole bunch of like mid-level managers all scared of taking that vision.
Absolutely. I think that's a great point. You do see that at Meta in every product they ever make. One thing that Apple has always done well, and you know, from the books I've read, this can actually be a nightmare for certain employees, but the end result is always this kind of a very clean and focused product, is that you do have this manager who says, this is what we're going to do. This is the vision. You're not going off to do your own special snowflake project that gets fragmentedly implemented and abandoned in 6 months when you go and leave to a different company anyway. You're going to follow this plan, and this is the product we're going to ship. It's going to have these features. It's not going to have all of these extra features. We're going to focus on doing these two or three things right. And that's how you get some of the most incredible products in Apple's history. Wobble in our comments saying Meta has sold 20 million headsets and Apple has sold 200,000. I think they typed 20,000. I think that's a typo. That's a great point to make. But, you know, Nokia sold hundreds of millions, if not billions, of phones before the iPhone destroyed it. There have been many times in the history of technology where a company who was the incumbent is taken over by a company that at first sells very few products, as they start with a higher priced product and then slowly bring it down to be more and more accessible. But it is a good point to say that right now that is speculation. As you're saying, we're right now getting swept up in your view, Wabo, in hype and speculation. That's something we do need to be clear about. RM talking about the point of retention, you know, do 20 million headsets that are used once every 2 weeks matter more than if 200,000 headsets were used once every 2 days? We don't know the data yet. This is something we'll really want to know.
Let me talk about a specific demo I had here, and we need to let David go here so he can recover before he flies across the Atlantic to pick up his Vision Pro. But one of the demos they showed me was they had me drop a 3D model into the environment in front of me, and it was a model of a race car, a very low to the ground race car. And it dropped into the environment in front of me. I got up, walked around it, sat down inside of the race car in the middle of the floor. And I tried to understand what was happening software-wise around me. And it turns out that if I moved my body, it would make the race car more transparent. I could see through the race car more the more I moved around. So I realized if I got up and I could walk through the car from one end of the room to the other, or I could walk down, sit down right in the middle of the car and just sit really still, and the car would slowly fade in into really solidly being represented around me with my physical background around me, and I could put my hands like this and pretend I'm racing in this model of the car. This is the use case that this headset is being sold for. If you want to go and build a $100,000 or multi-million dollar race car, you could model it out 100% in VR and then go view it in this headset. And this has been the use case for high-end PC-based VR systems for the last decade. Vision Pro is going to do that. And they showed me this invisible software system for fading away virtual objects to show me my physical environment more believably. It felt cool. It worked well, but I was able to see through the magic of their software a little bit. And remember, I only had less than 30 minutes, so seeing these things was hard. People are going to see the limitations of Vision OS 1.0 very quickly once they actually spend a couple hours with it.
Sure, 100%. But the first iPhone launched without video recording capability or 3G. Apple has frequently launched first generation hardware missing key features and first generation operating systems. At WWDC this year in June, we should see potentially some hints of Vision OS 2.0. They are only just getting started here. And one of the things I want to talk about here, you said that that's the use case for the headset. But I think what you meant probably was a use case, because the primary purpose of this that is being marketed for is entertainment. This, I've seen some people claim that Vision Pro is a dev kit or Vision Pro is for large companies. The vast majority of Apple's marketing around this is consumer entertainment. It's sitting and having a gigantic personal virtual screen to consume regular entertainment. It's Apple immersive video. It's spatial computing, having multiple windows open around you in your space. But of course, one of the criticisms we see in our comments here and from a lot of people is that this is going to feel because it's not good for gaming. And so Shal Alaska in our comments said, iPhone did everything about the phone better. No Apple headset will ever be suitable for enthusiast VR gaming. But it's important to remember that when the iPhone came out and was popularized, and even, 10, 15 years later, and even today, it's not the device that people use for hardcore portable gaming. When the iPhone came out, it was the PlayStation Portable or the Nintendo DS. Today, it's the Steam Deck or the Nintendo Switch. But those devices are not sold at anywhere near the scale of smartphones. That's the thing here. The general computing device is never the one that's best optimized for gaming in this case. You still would carry around your PlayStation Portable because it had thumbsticks, the same way that you still carry your Switch because it has buttons and thumbsticks. And nobody said, oh, the iPhone is going to fail because it doesn't have thumbsticks. So it's possible that Quest continues to exist and is very popular for a long, long time, if Meta wants to keep it like that, as a games console that is better because it has track controllers with thumbsticks and buttons. But over time, these general productivity headsets from Apple and then Samsung and Google, while they start so expensive that only a few can afford them, as the price of those crashes and their utility increases, they actually cross past Quest at some point, where even though they're sold at $1,000 while Quest is sold at $400 or $300, they start to sell more because what you can do with it is more. A smartphone like an iPhone today costs $1,000, but why do people still buy them when they wouldn't spend $1,000 on almost any other tech device? Because the utility of them, the sum of the utility of everything you can do with a smartphone, it's a camera, it's a navigator, it's a communicator, it's a flashlight, it's a calculator, it's a calendar, it's a note-taking, it's everything at once. It's all of these pieces of utility in one device. Mm-hmm. And even though it's not as good as gaming as a Steam Deck, you can say, what's the point of an iPhone? It can't play, Grand Theft Auto. It's still the vastly, vastly higher selling device because it's a general entertainment and utility device.
Yeah. You're talking about that difference between what the early adopter looks for and what the mainline adopter looks for in a market. And I saw this demonstration just today. We'll see how much I can get across. I want to respond to a couple comments here. Ross, so wait, in your demo, did you play any games? No, I did not. I opened up a flat game to show the multitasking. I wanted to play it, but I didn't. They didn't even give me the time to try playing a flat game in my demo. And then I saw Super Fruit Ninja in my menu in the list of available apps, and I'm like, right, very at the beginning of the demo, can I go into Super Fruit Ninja? And they're like, no, you can't. And then right before the scene, when the demo person exits the room and another person comes in to take my photo on this thing, I'm like, okay, now's my chance. I'm going to go launch Super Fruit Ninja. And it didn't launch. I couldn't even launch Super Fruit Ninja from the menu. Or the person outside on the tablet hit the X button right when I tried to launch it. One or the other, either Super Fruit Ninja didn't launch or it was canceled on the outside. Either way, I was not able to test a game. They specifically kept you out of high movement, fast movement stuff. And then there was another comment here. Where is it? Yeah, people, Jack saying the only reason I didn't order one yet is bad economy in the U.S. right now. Bills are ridiculous. Otherwise, $3,500 is just a nice new gaming laptop and a phone upgrade for the year. And then Areza's comment. Yeah, I truly want a VR experience that looks like real life while I'm talking with friends in real life with a goofy-ass pair of sci-fi glasses on my head. I like that overall impression because this demo time did end with me taking it. They took that photo. I went out of the room. I'm like, we've got one more thing for you. We're going to go show you EyeSight. I walk into a room and I'm standing and there's an Apple employee standing. They've got the headset on and the EyeSight. They've got scans of their eyes. They're looking out from the headset at me with virtual eyes, right, on this EyeSight camera, this thing. I know this is going to be a brief demo going into it. I know they're not going to give me a lot of time. So I immediately try to break it, right? I'm doing this, trying to see how these eyes look from different angles. I squatted down towards the wall and I squatted down like vertically about half my height. And the angle looked really weird on the eyes. They didn't make eye contact with me. At the beginning, when I was close to the person and he's looking at me, the eyes tracked really well. Like he was making eye contact with me through the glasses. And I could stand reasonably close and have an okay discussion with the person who had fake eyes. I'm not convinced that this is going to do what Apple intends it to do. I don't think this is going to convince people that VR headsets aren't goofy. What I saw from that few seconds of this EyeSight demo did not do anything to convince me that this feature in this state is going to really make VR any less awkward. It felt awkward to be interacting with someone that way. And that's first impressions, first glance. They walked me into a room and I went eyes in with a person who had fake eyes in front of me and I felt awkward. Now, will other people try to break it like I did? No. They'll have a reasonable conversation with a person just a few feet away. But I'm just, it felt a little goofy, a little too low resolution, a little like googly eyes. It felt, you know, Palmer Luckey's joke about googly eyes doing most of what these things do for you is not too wrong. I didn't feel too much addition from it.
So, you say you immediately tried to break it. Do you think that could have been something to do with it? Did you try to give it like a few seconds of not trying to break it, as in seeing it on a horizontal plane like it's meant to be seen?
Yeah, completely fair. Yeah, I mean, that's true of all VR, right? Like it's fantastic until you realize what the limitations are, right? We could have gone into an Oculus Go in 2018 and gone like this. Oh, wow. This is amazing. VR is incredible. And then, oh shit, right? The moment you lean forward and the same, you know, like you lean outside your boundaries in any current VR headset and you kind of realize the limitations and it's crummy. I you're right. If you use this the way you're supposed to, maybe it'll be a little nice value add. They did demonstrate that like if he plays media inside the headset, it'll cloud over so that I know that they're distracted by something else. This very much looks almost exactly like what they had in Ready Player One. This is the headset and the technology that they show in Ready Player One. I want to see version 2 or 3 of this tech. I'm not convinced version 1 is like going to wow anyone. And it's a bummer that the people out there, the $3,500 people, like, I don't know. I want to try this.
So badly. I really, really, that'll be one of the first things we do when I arrive in New York. Well, I want to see this.
Yeah, that's what's mind-numbing here is, how did we get to this? How did they sell hundreds of thousands, according to the estimates, of this without any timeline on how long it takes to get scanned, how good the scanning process is, and whether this actually works? Like, they're not, people that are buying this $3,500 spatial computer aren't buying it for the eyes. They're not buying it for the personas, and that's fair.
I think there are some people who bought this with this feature that wouldn't without it, because some people do see headsets as inherently isolating to those around you, and they see this as a useful feature that even if it's not high quality, it just makes it aware to other people that they can see you. As you say, there is this inherent feature in it where if something is blocking your view of the other person, you will see that blue haze over the eyes. So even that itself, it's an indication of, can I see you? If I'm sitting in a Quest 3 and I point my face around at someone, okay, you can see them, but they don't know that you can see them, right? They have no idea whether you're in a fully VR experience and you're seeing something completely different, or that you're in pass-through. There's no inherent indication of that. Even if you're in pass-through, you do have that indicator on, there's no indication that a mixed reality object isn't covering you. Just from that alone, just that ability to say, is this person in the room with me able to see me right now, or are they blindfolded? I think this is useful. As you say, though, maybe the quality isn't right there yet, though. The use of a lenticular display means that to render those different angles, you do get a relatively low resolution for each angle. But, you know, we've seen concepts from Meta of what this might look like eventually once it gets, you know, higher quality. And the goal here is that eventually with these headsets, it should eventually look like you're just looking through a transparent optic on both sides. It should look like, it should be eventually perceptually indistinguishable from just being a darkened transparent optic. I wonder how long it'll take to get there. And I wonder if maybe even improvements to software on Vision Pro with the rendering quality could improve that over time.
Yep. And it's, there's a lot of little pieces they could do to improve that. Personas being the other element of this. There's zero demonstration publicly of personas other than a 30-second moment in my first demo where they demonstrated a Fly FaceTime call of a digital human appearing in a window right next to me. And I talked to them ever so slightly. And I wrote in that demo that was an uncomfortable human interaction. Like, I felt like after a few minutes of interacting with that digital human, I would have felt really uncomfortable. But I only had 30 seconds. That's a first impression. But from that demo, they really haven't done any more demonstrations of the personas. And even in their marketing launch materials, they specify that their persona avatars are a beta product. And then you've got your news that's coming later this week on what might be coming elsewhere. I am convinced almost wholeheartedly that company or companies that work out a specification or protocol for how we do avatar generation, photorealistic avatar generation, and transmission of the expressions on those avatars over the internet, the company or companies that figure that out will own the future. I don't know if it's AT&T, Verizon, Google, Apple. I don't know who does it, but someone has to come together. Meta has this tech for codec avatars they've demonstrated in research form. Apple has this technology for personas that's in beta on this headset that's $3,500. How do those two devices talk to each other? How do you make a phone call in the year 2030 where, bloop, you appear right in front of me and I feel like as if you're actually standing there? How do we do that, and who standardizes it?
Well, Apple often doesn't care about standards. To Apple, if you're using a non-Apple device, F you. You know, you might as well not exist. What was it a year ago or so when someone asked Tim Cook about RCS interoperability?
Yep.
And, you know, what do I do if I'm trying to send a high-quality video over text to my mother? And his response was, you buy your mother an iPhone. And that seems to be Apple's response here. They're not going to care if personas don't work on a Meta headset. Their answer will be 100%. Get a Vision.
You're so 100%, and we spent a lot of our show here, and let's sign off here and let David rest so that he can come to America. But what Apple did was how do I frame this? We spent a lot of our show talking about how these companies like Netflix and others are saying no to the 30%, no to the rulemaking on Apple. But there's a couple other companies here, Google and Meta, that have dealt with Apple at a much deeper layer of technology battling, right? Someone had to spend billions of dollars to put YouTube on the original iPhone. Someone had to spend billions of dollars to put Google on phones. And then eventually someone started paying, like Google was paying to put on phones. And then some point, phones started paying to get Google on their phones, right? That's how this stuff sort of works over time. You build out services and customers for it. We're at the beginning phases of that for spatial computing. And all the thing I wanted to add to our earlier discussion about 30% and standardization, right? It would behoove Google and Meta to come up with open web standards for payment processing and avatar transmission that leave Apple out of the loop. If you want to find something that Meta and Google agree on, it's open web standards that Apple doesn't need to necessarily pursue. And I want to point that out, is that is the strong suit of these companies. If Meta and Google can figure out how to agree on something like this that cuts Apple out of it, you could be right. Apple doesn't care. But if you get the rest of the industry aligned, you could have trouble.
I mean, it doesn't even need to be open theoretically, as long as it's just available cross-platform. You know, today, the US is pretty much the only place where people really care about iMessage, right? In the vast majority of the world, people use WhatsApp to communicate with each other. So it's a Meta-owned product that runs on your iPhone, it runs on your Android phone, it runs on your Windows PC, and it runs on your Mac. They don't care what device you're on, they make it available everywhere. And it'll probably be similar with headsets. If it's not Meta, I would expect Meta will probably make their codec avatars available on Apple's headset as well, and on Google's headset. They will want to be the social layer above just their own devices. And if they don't, someone else will. And that will be in the same way that WhatsApp solved that problem of free cross-device communication. It seems like someone else will want to there. And I think Meta has enough of the understanding of the history of their own product to understand why it succeeded to make that same decision in the spatial era.
All right. Well, I think that's it for us here. Probably I want to let David go and rest so he can make it to the United States and we could put an Apple Vision Pro in his luggage and send it back to the London area. Thank you so much for the incredible hard work, David, and to my team. We've got a lot of big news coming this week. We'll have embargoes up tomorrow that are pretty big throughout the week. We've got a couple big reviews up on site today. But the next few weeks are unprecedented, and we are going to be on top of every step of it. Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you to David for sticking with us for this extra long show, even though we shouldn't have. We'll see.
Thank you so much. And as our commenters say, no, Ian, it will not be in my luggage. It will be in my hands. It will never
right.
Leave.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
A meter away from me. Don't worry. We're not going to make that mistake.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, everyone.
Fair.
We'll see you next week.